also sad because the Minister for Labour is a medical doctor. In fact, I think I heard he's a surgeon. And I would have thought that would have been, an additional whatever to end this crisis. But you don't see a sense of urgency either in the man or the government itself. You don't see that sense of urgency to end this strike. You don't see that sense of admitting or acknowledging the fact that lives could, and I'm sure by now lives will be lost due to this crisis. You don't see that sense of the inconvenience that people have to go through, of acknowledging the inconvenience of what people have to go through in order to quickly bring this strike to an end. You don't see any of these, both on the part of the government and, again, of course, on the part of the NALD. Though, having said that, you know, this ding-dong between doctors and whatever has been going on for donkey years. Mm-hmm. And what you do find is that in 9 cases out of 10, it is the government that has not honored its own obligation in instances like this. Okay, so the story says the Medical Association, they blamed Dr. Chris Ngige for the prolonged strike. And this is, let me just read what they're saying here. He says that this is the vice president of NAD, Arome Adejo. He said, NALD as a body calls for the sacking of Ngige, for he is a major factor aggravating things. He's also coming out to tell lies about doctors and constantly aggravating the already tense situation. He added that contrary to Ngige's claims, the demands of the striking doctors had not been met. Then he said, the president should call us alongside Ngige. You see, we've now degenerated to a point where the two of them, the doctors are saying, let the two of us go before the headmaster and let him decide which one of us to kill. And he says, and let him defend himself and let us defend ourselves. No demand has been met.
Okay.
Let Ngige come out straight. No money has been paid, and let the insurance money he said was paid be probed. You claimed to have paid insurance, but the people who died are yet to be paid. The MRT fund that was paid, only a fraction was paid. Now, there's also the issue of illegal doctors. And Aroma says, on the illegal doctors, we were the ones who told them that there were some people like that. We told them last year, we wrote letters to him, telling him that money has been paid wrongly to some individuals. We begged him to make sure that the money paid was returned to the right source. And they go on and on and on. Now, the question now is, I'm sorry this morning, where is the president in all this? Some of us were quite excited when Festus Keyamo, SAN, was made a minister. I must say I was quite, he's my good bro, I don't deny that. And we've always seen him as some kind of activist. Now as a minister of state, we call on him to come out and clear himself of being involved in this shenanigans that is going on, subjecting Nigerians to this kind of hardship. I call on Festus. This is hardly ever done. But if we must get the doctors back to work,
yeah,
all gloves are off. All gloves are off. Festus, you've been known. Festus Keyamo, you've been known to be on the side of the masses. You are a minister of labor, a minister of labor in a government that has allowed this strike to linger on. We would like to hear a statement from you, because now this thing concerns all of us. I know it's going to be tough, Festus, and you know there's no malice in what I'm saying, but we want the doctors back. We definitely want whatever it takes. We want the doctors back. So, all known and unknown, but legal methods will be applied to save the souls of Nigerians from this very, very embarrassing situation. The next question is to the president. Where is the president in all this? Day after day, the president must be supplied the papers. Question number one, has he called Ngige? Question number two, has he asked for any file? Has he been properly briefed as to what is going on? Question number three, has he given definite instructions as to what should be done? And question number four, Mr. President, I think the time has come, whatever it takes, for you to call both the NALD and the Honorable Minister for Labour, everybody, Secretary to the Government, all sit down, whether it's going to take 48 hours, and please provide basic health services, which in itself had been inadequate in the past. Currently, it had been inadequate. We expect our president now, on behalf of the people who voted for you and those who didn't alike, you're the president of our country, you're the father of all. We don't have the resources to go to the United Kingdom when we fall sick. Some of us don't have the resources to even go to private hospitals when we fall sick. So we'd like to call on Mr. President. What should be priority on your desk this morning? Oh, unfortunately, he's going to Imo State today. When you do come back, what should be priority is to go through the file and give instructions and let us put an end to this endless crisis. Festus Keyamo, I'm sorry I put you under the bus, but I want my people treated. I want my people to have access to the minimum health care that we can give them. And definitely, I don't think you and I want our people to die. That's my submission for this morning.
We're done.
I sounded like a politician.
Yes. Giving, like an opposition party politician.
But the truth is, Sheriff, the truth is, this is one of the reasons why some people like, you know, who have, would never take up government appointments. You would get, look at Festus, now he's embarrassed, the Minister for Labour in the government, and this is happening. Have we heard any story outside that he went and had a shattered argument with Ngigi that, okay, let's get this thing over and done with? He's always been known to be part of the masses. I mean, he's well known for his some human rights lawyer and so on and
that's
so
right.
forth. So he has to stand up to be counted. I'm sorry I made him the subject this morning, but Yorubas have there's a proverb on the streets. We don't want our people dying daily. We don't want
whatever
this to
it takes.
Whatever it takes.
That's the meaning of that thing, that proverb. Whatever it takes.
No, when you want to translate, you translate word for word. Don't talk about Lamafun. Where is whatever it takes in that sentence?
It's whatever it takes.
No. Don't talk about Lamafun. It is what it takes
it's
that
what,
we will give
it's
it.
It's whatever
it takes.
Okay, sorry. Jerry, let's go to page 29.
You know, there
punch.
Are no doctors. If anything,
there are no doctors, though. Nobody should fall sick at this time, beg. Public notice: who is afraid of 94-year-old E.K. Clark?
Yeah, this is actually an ad public notice, but it's in the papers and it calls for attention. And what is it all about? After the NDDC report sometime last week, there's something that went viral on the social media that a company owned by E.K. Clark, Chief E.K. Clark, was involved in the NDDC contract and so on and so forth. So he came out to clear his name. And so this advert is put is put by him. And it is titled, "Who is Afraid of 94-Year-Old E.K. Clark?" Now, I'm wondering why the emphasis on the fact that he's 94. I'm just wondering. I'm just wondering why he would want to put that. Is there some emotion behind that? By the way, he says he's in the UK, and but he wants to state clearly. Now, he says that he has no hands in the company. He says the principal shareholders of Genuine Construction Engineering has a company called Pelfaco Limited, Gesi Asamoah and Brenda Asamoah as owners, okay, directors and key management personnel. Now, he says that, before we now say, okay, who owns Pelfaco? He says that Pelfaco Limited was incorporated in Port Harcourt, Nigeria, registered in 1988 and puts his office address, and that the shareholders of Pelfaco, directors and key management personnel, are Ebigesiye Pele A. Alpha and Gesi Asamoah, who again is a director there. So he says he has nothing. His name doesn't appear in anything at all, and that he has no for sure protection contract or anything like that. And that he says, I do not have any connections or association whatsoever with the said company, Genuine Construction Limited. Of course, he goes on the usual, he assures his family, and now issues a final warning on behalf of A.K. Clark. Let me say, final warning and advice to the purveyors of this fake news to desist from maligning and tarnishing his name. Okay? So that is where we are as of now. Now, if you then have more information, you might make it available to us to put this in the balance. Otherwise, you hold your peace.
Yep. Now, let's go to this interesting advertorial on page 36 of the Punch. Celebration of Life. Late Dr. Emmanuel Adesanya Abiodun, 23rd February 1932 to 2nd August 2021. Advertiser, Ogun State Internal Revenue Service.
I'd always frowned. First of all, I honestly, when it comes to obituaries, really, apart from the element where you would want to announce, you know, what would happen, this idea of putting 20, 30 obituaries when somebody dies, it's a personal thing. There's no problem with that. But it becomes a bit worrying when you now find a government agency, because if the name is put there, Ogun State Internal Revenue Service, with the two logos, the logos of the Internal Service and the logo of the State. So it's a full, this is an official document. Placing an obituary with public funds, you know, to announce the death of the father of the governor. Now, okay, it's trivial. You say, maybe, what is 600,000? What is 500,000? And so on and so forth. But when you don't take care of the little things, it magnifies, it gets bigger. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Is anybody buying cows? Is anybody with government money? And so on and so forth. The governor should query whoever issued this advertorial for embarrassing him. Governor Abiodun, to be fair to him, is a man of means. You can't take that away from him. Whether he went to Ife or he went to, well, that's neither here nor there. But he himself is a man of means. His family is a family of means. They don't need Ogun State public funds to put an obituary in the paper. And this is what iService does. This is the way people under you, through iService, could end up embarrassing you. And so the governor should give whoever did this a query, because the this is what the advice says. It says the management and entire staff of Ogun State Internal Revenue Service celebrate a life full of legacies, a renowned educationist, whatever, an honest man and father of the governor. It would have been bad enough for Ogun State Revenue Service to even put an obituary had it been the governor himself. So we need to get these little things right. If we don't, I'm sorry to have to bring this up, but if we don't get these little things right, they magnify. We need to have a sense. We need to have a sense of responsibility in handling government funds, public funds. That is what has brought us to the poverty that we are in today.
Maybe they have a budget for things like this.
You can't have a budget.
Maybe it's in their laws. I'm just saying. I'm sorry, but I'm just saying. Maybe it's in their law somewhere.
You know. I'm recovering. Sorry. Don't aggravate me this
sorry,
moment.
Sorry.
Sheriff Monkey Love.
Sorry, sir. Sorry, sir.
Kekere, I'm warning you.
Sorry, sir.
No budget. You know, it because even in the past we have seen situations like this where.
Yeah.
In the past, some of these agencies take cash to the excellency, they buy cows. You can't be doing this with public funds.
It still happens here today. We've heard stories of how, lawmakers will go and on oversight functions, and these government agencies will have bags waiting.
Bags waiting, yes. We can't.
From public funds?
From public funds.
Ah, come on.
No. I mean, I don't know if they pay their pensioners or pay their workers as and when due, but the symbolism of this is not good. And I would say that for the governor to make an example, he should query whoever heads this agency. Should query him for embarrassing him. And at the very least, the slap on the wrist would be, a severe warning. And of course, he might have to refund the money. We'll wait and see what happens.
Yes, we'll wait. Let's get to page 5. We're dropping the punch. Let's go pick up a Vanguard right now. Open grazing, Southern Governor's Battle, Mietiala, is here on page 5. 5.
Well, the battle is still ding dong. It is still ding dong. And what I'm seeing, when you look at the issue of open grazing, the VAT issue, and so on and so forth, it looks as if we're having a silent revolution going on.
That's right.
And it will be That's interesting right. to see how the federal government reacts to some of these things. Because you see, what has happened is that, to be honest with you, what would have been a cordial relationship between these two bodies, these levels of government, has been broken by arrogance, mainly. By arrogance. The federal government seems to see the federal government at federal level seems to think that it's a big daddy to governments. No, you're tiers of government.
That's right.
And what has been exhibited in this government particularly is that whatever we say goes. And people are saying, no, nicely. The beauty of all this is that everybody is headed to court. You understand? Getting the appropriate judgments and following suit. So it's a good development to watch. I think we will be the beneficiaries at the end of it all. But my personal emotional feelings is open grazing has caused so much crisis in the country. Why would you want to insist on it? Even take out the legal part of it. Take out all the legal whatever. Why would you want to insist on something that has led to the deaths of so many? That is why you then find some people, you might call them mischief makers, and begin to ask, is there a sinister motive somewhere? Because some of these things actually defy some level of logic in my mind. But we will see how it goes. The two sides are blowing hot air. We will see where all this is end. But congratulations to the states for winning that case on VAT.
That's right. But you know, FIRS, they've written to the National Assembly now.
Yes.
They want the National Assembly to put the VAT collection exclusively on the exclusive list, which means that the federal government will have the right to collect it. They also want a revenue court.
Well, what the governors, you've written to the National Assembly.
Yeah.
The governors will quickly contact their members in the National Assembly, make it public, and tell them this is what the people want.
Yeah.
So, which is good, because what it then means is now you will see why it is necessary for you to vote certain people of certain character into the National Assembly, people who are ready to go fight for your rights.
You know, the fear in that process is that some of these states, they won't be able to survive. So we can't really say that they would support it if the national thing goes ahead.
Some won't survive, but some that are struggling to survive,
yeah.
out of their own resource base, will be able to survive and do better, like Lagos. How do you collect X amount and at the point of allocation, you're collecting a tenth of what you have earned?
That's right.
I mean, you understand what I'm saying?
It's poor. It's abysmal.
Yes. So this is what the God did. Bolo Yami. Every man from everybody they be in Papa name.
So if he gets to the National Assembly, what I'm saying, the some states who won't be able to survive, their lawmakers may not support if it goes into voting.
Well. What you need to do? What needs to be done at state level?
Yeah.
In everybody's cases, look, call your lawmakers. Tell them, explain, I agree with them on a position that favors your people. Because, look, governance, you can't take out competitiveness in governance.
No, you can't.
You can't.
You can't
continue to spoon-feed certain people.
We've seen governance in this country where other states are emulating some states to do some things in their own state. We've seen collaborations
of course.
Between states to make things happen.
You remember the collaboration between Lagos and one state, but this is Zamfara.
Kebbi.
So what it will do is it will bring up competitiveness and then people will be able to hold their own. Well, they will try to hold them responsible. But when you think of things like this again, is this where all the money goes?
Let's take one more story. Page 20 of the Vanguard: COVID-19 vaccine and nursing mothers. What authorities say.
Now, this is just in case you're a nursing mother. It says, pregnant and nursing mothers are particularly desperately searching for answers. The World Health Organization says it is highly recommended for women. It says, based on all the evidence that we have, it is not only safe for breastfeeding mothers to be vaccinated, but it is also highly recommended. It is important for her own health that she be protected from COVID-19 and that she's able to take care of her family as best as possible. Now, there's a story here. Part of the story says a vaccine unlikely to cross to breast milk. Mm. Okay, it says unlike the yellow fever vaccine, COVID-19 vaccines do not carry a risk of igniting an active infection. Harvard University says vaccine safe, effective during pregnancy. Now, the NHS in the UK says the vaccine you will have depends on us. Let me read the story carefully. I'll just read the story for your information. You cannot catch COVID-19 from the vaccines and cannot pass it to your baby through your breast milk. If you are breastfeeding, the vaccines you can have depends on your age. Now, listen to this. Listen well. If you are 40 or over, you can have any of the COVID-19 vaccines. If you are under 40 and do not have a health condition that increases your risk of getting seriously ill from COVID-19, it's preferable for you to have the Pfizer, BioNTech, or Moderna vaccine. The Pfizer, BioNTech, or Moderna vaccines are preferable in people under 40 because of an extremely rare blood clotting problem linked to the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. This is from the Vanguard.
The Vanguard, indeed.
And they are quoting the NHS in the UK.
In the UK. Okay. Let's take one more story before we go. Oloyede Rashid Ajiboye, when one good term deserves another.
Yeah, especially in the case of Oloyede, he's been a maverick, in all honesty, and that's in Jamb. The turnaround in Jamb that we must acknowledge that Oloyede, takes credit for. The story says that the board was like any other federal agency, which relied on government for subvention, despite making some money. You know, it is on record that Oloyede declared, how much was it, do you know?
I don't know. I can't remember.
People were surprised.
Everybody, yes.
The story says that the board now remits funds to the coffers of government. Instead of asking for money now, they can remit funds. Also, the computer-based test format of conducting unified UTME that he made when he assumed office was improved upon. Some innovations were added to reduce malpractices to the barest minimum. This year, candidates who wrote the exam were made to provide their NIN. And I think the latest that I heard is that universities now have the freedom to determine their own cutoff points. I'm hoping one day that we will scrap Jamb, and universities.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm hoping one day that today. I didn't go to school. Have to go through all this Jamb problem. It was so simple. If you had your A levels, your A levels three papers, you go straight to the university. You know, and it was smooth. Then if you had the, it's political considerations that brought about Jamb. Thinking that he might correct the so-called imbalance between the North and the South and so other things. It was a lot of politicking that brought about Jamb. Where you had lower cutoff point for this and for that. But thankfully, El-Rufai and some of the other people in the North have recognized that there's absolutely no need for that.
Right.
You know, to make their own students too very, very competitive.
Indeed. Just to answer that question earlier, just did a little search. Before Oloyede, Jamb remitted 50 million naira. Before Oloyede's tenure, they remitted 50 million naira to the government, to the Nigerian government, in 7 years.
Let's use Nigerian English. For the whole 7 years,
yes,
they remitted 50 million.
50 million.
Uh-huh. What did Oloyede remit after?
Then, in Oloyede's tenure, let's use this 2020, for instance. Let's pick 2020, for instance.
Yes.
Jamb remitted 7 billion for 2020. Okay.
Wait, let's do some arithmetic. For 7 years, 50 million. 50 divided by 7 is what? Let's just average it. Philip.
Maybe 7.
7. So that's 7 million 49. A year. Then he now remitted how much in
7
1 year?
7 billion.
7 billion. Okay. 7 million out of 7 billion is what percentage? Is it up to 1%?
No.
So what could have gone wrong?
I can't answer
you,
that.
You see, you know, some of us grew up in military government by immediate effect, you know, that kind of thing. I tell you, if it was during the time of Buhari, his first coming, all this, all that, they will have questions to answer.
Yeah.
But see where democracy has landed us.
We'll see the best.
I don't know.
Okay.
I think that every country needs to determine what works for him.
I think so too.
Because look, for having been an adult, I'm not an advocate for military government, but I do have a nostalgic feeling where you can sometimes you get so frustrated you think that Nigeria needs an extra iron hand and some other processes of getting things right and getting them in place. The court processes have been abused. You remember what we had the other day?
Yeah.
Judges, or you know.
We must go now.
We must go.
Okay. Thank you. We have to go now. Jimmy will be back at 9 on Daily Digest today. Thank you all for being a part of this. Morning to you.
Nowadays, small thing you don't dey hear. Chairman do give away. Master do give away. But the thing be say, they give away no dey ever reach.
99.3 Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria.